public comment on administrative docket number 0567. Justice Kadish is in Carson City. The other six justices are in Las Vegas. Pursuant to the corrected order and the notice of hearing, the purpose of this matter is to consider any legislation that may have been enacted during the previous session of the legislature and its impact on the mediation program established by Supreme Court rules that were enacted and extended through June 30, 2021. I have asked Mr. John McCormick, Deputy Director of the Administrative Office of the Courts, to provide an overview to the court of Assembly Bill 486, which I think is the principal piece of legislation connected to this subject matter. And then we will invite public comment thereafter. Mr. McCormick, thank you for being available today, and please proceed.
Thank you, Chief Justice and honorable members of the court. As the Chief indicated, my name is John McCormick. I'm the Assistant Court Administrator at the AOC. And again, as the Chief, indicated, I'm going to try to provide a brief overview of Assembly Bill 486 of this session that just ended on Monday, obviously dealing with evictions. As the bill has been enrolled and delivered to the governor, when I checked about 10 minutes ago, it was not listed as signed yet. Currently, the bill and the program language it creates exist only in statutes of Nevada. It doesn't amend any Nevada revised statute, just sort of a interesting note. The bill expires on June 5th of 2023, which incidentally is the last day of the next regularly scheduled legislative session. And the provisions of the measure apply to residential and mobile home summary evictions, which are for non-payment or default of rent. It does not apply to evictions based on nuisance, use of the premises contrary to the lease, or evictions related to controlled substances or criminal activities, nor does it apply to commercial evictions. When an eviction action is filed, the Justice Court, obviously in this case, must stay the eviction for not more than 30 days to allow for an eviction mediation slash alternative dispute resolution program established by the Supreme Court or the district or the justice courts to occur. So that's where the authorization for the mediation program comes into this bill. It does repeal the authorization that was added during the special session in NRS 20.2544 and replaces it with this language in statute. And to note on the mediation program, this bill provides that the program ends upon expiration of the bill or at such a time that the Supreme Court determines that there is not sufficient funding to pay for the program. Initially, there had been a concern that we could potentially run out of funding with the program still statutorily viable, so that amendment was made. This bill allows a tenant to assert an affirmative defense at any stage of the eviction proceeding, indicating that either the tenant has an application for rental assistance under consideration, or that the landlord has refused to participate in or accept the application for or accept money from a rental assistance program. The landlord may, by motion, rebut that affirmative defense. And if the landlord files such a motion, the court can order mediation, have a hearing on the motion, or keep the stay in place. If the affirmative defense is asserted, the court must maintain the stay that was already in place until either eviction mediation has occurred, the rental assistance application has been decided, or the tenant proves that the landlord would not participate in the application or accept rental assistance. This was one point that I was unclear on, so I spoke with the with Chairman Yeager, who presented the bill during the session, and indicated that this stay, based upon the assertion of the affirmative defense, is not subject to the sort of initial 30-day stay. This stay exists until one of those conditions is met. So just a point of clarification there. Everything stayed for 30 days, but in the event the affirmative defense is asserted, then that stay lasts until one of those conditions is met. If the application that the tenant has made for rental assistance is approved, the court dismisses the eviction when the landlord receives the rental assistance money. If the tenant is able to prove that the landlord would not assist in the application process or accept rental assistance money, the court must deny the eviction and may award, in this case, damages to the tenant. The court may grant a landlord an exemption from the stay requirement if the landlord upon and if the landlord has provided the tenant with written notice that he or she will seek such an exemption when the eviction notice is served, and there is evidence that the landlord faces a realistic threat of foreclosure if the landlord is unable to evict. This bill clarifies that an application for rental assistance has to be actively pursued. There was a concern raised during the hearings on this bill that potentially an individual could just file an application and not do anything with it. So clarification was added that the tenant must be actively pursuing, providing the backup, et cetera, for that application for this to apply. If the landlord continues to pursue eviction when that landlord has received rental assistance on behalf of a tenant, the rental assistance program may file a claim for wrongful eviction against the landlord, and the tenant may file a claim for wrongful eviction as well, so the tenant or the assistance program can file that claim for wrongful eviction. If the court, upon that claim, finds the landlord accepted rental assistance but continued the eviction, the court may impose upon the landlord a civil penalty. If the court finds the eviction was wrongful, the rental assistance program filed the claim, the court can award the full amount of assistance paid by the program back to the program. And if the claim for wrongful eviction was made by the tenant, the court may award the tenant up to 25% of the rental assistance paid. The court may also award attorney's fees and costs in these actions for wrongful eviction. In the event that the court finds there was a wrongful eviction, the landlord may not file any claim against the tenant for any amount that has been paid by rental assistance. And all eviction notices must contain information on the availability of rental assistance programs and the provisions of this bill. So that's the broad, all sort of residential mobile home evictions part. And then there's a secondary program.
Recording is on.
I'm calling it a secondary program where the tenant is not involved, basically. And it requires Home Means Nevada, the entity that's administering the program, to create an electronic form that to be completed by a landlord who is seeking rental assistance, to collect information verifying the tenant has defaulted on the rent and the tenant has not applied for rental assistance. Includes a description of the property, including the number of units that landlord owns, and provides information on the landlord, including where that landlord is domiciled, if the landlord uses a property management company, and if the landlord receives more than $4 million in gross revenue from rent, and the contact information. And the reason that's collected will become clear here. It's kind of convoluted in the statute, or in the bill, rather. If the landlord is eligible for this sort of secondary program, well, the landlord is eligible for this program if the landlord is domiciled in Nevada or employs a property management company in Nevada and makes less than $4 million a year in gross net revenue from rent. So again, I think the idea here was to target quote unquote smaller landlords for this portion of the bill. If Home Means Nevada, after reviewing this information they've collected, determines the landlord is eligible, the landlord or Home Means Nevada will forward the information regarding the landlord to the applicable housing agency or social services agency within 60 days. Then that housing social service agency must attempt to contact the tenant regarding rental assistance, and this is when the tenant has been non-responsive. And then if the tenant fails to respond to the social service agency / housing agency, then that agency must determine if the landlord will accept rental assistance. And then if the landlord will accept rental assistance, they must sign a document agreeing to accept 100% of the delinquent rent and not to pursue an eviction action against the tenant for 90 days after receiving that assistance. And so this secondary program, when the tenant is non-responsive, is designed to try to compensate landlords through this, again, sort of secondary program. Originally, there was some discussion that this be funded with a general fund appropriation. However, as the bill came out, it indicated that $5 million of federal money, if it is allowable use that the state receives in the future, can be used to fund this program to help landlords when the tenant is not actively participating in the process of seeking rental assistance. So that is the sort of quick overview of AB 486, and I'm happy to try and answer questions if I can.
Thank you, Mr. McCormick. Do any of the justices have any questions? Okay, I see none. Mr. McCormick, thank you very much for your presentation here today. Are there any, we have received written public comment from the Legal Aid Center of Southern Nevada, from Susan Hallahan and Ms. Shannon Chambers with Home Means Nevada. I saw earlier that Ms. Chambers may be on the Zoom meeting call. If you are Ms. Chambers, do you have anything you'd like to add to the written comments that you've made?
So good afternoon, Chief Justice Hardesty and Justices of the Nevada Supreme Court. This is Shannon Chambers. I'm the Nevada Labor Commissioner. I'm also the President of Home Means Nevada, and thank you for the opportunity to submit written comments and speak today. And, you know, we were appointed the administrator of something new called the Rental Eviction Mediation Program back in October of 2020 that became effective with Senate Bill 1 through the 32nd special session of the Nevada Legislature. And I'm going to be very honest with you, it was new and we didn't quite know what to expect and had to implement it very, very quickly and worked extremely closely with, you know, the courts, the Nevada Supreme Court, the counties, with the state and the governor's office, with the counties and the treasurer and everybody to address hopefully what will be a once-in-a-lifetime situation. And what I want to communicate to all of you today is that I think we created a program that is successful. It's not perfect, and I could not say that to all of you, but we created something that we knew we could build upon going into 2021 and knew with the moratoriums in place that we could work together and create a plan and a collaborative effort to address this situation when the moratoriums ended in 2021. And we have brought together a team, which I've been in state government in Nevada for over 10 years, that I have not seen before. We have brought together the counties, the courts, social services agencies, the executive branch, the legislative branch, to address this situation of individuals through, in many cases, no fault of their own, losing their jobs and finding themselves not being able to pay rent. And then the good side of this is millions and billions of dollars of federal assistance, which may not come around again. So the structures that Home Means Nevada has built to implement this program, to make it work along with all our partners, in my opinion, has been successful and should be continued. The legislature, through Assembly Bill 486, seems to feel that way as well. I cannot speak for them. You know, the governor's office was involved in those discussions. I was involved in those discussions, and I think what we are trying to do all together, mainly with this bill, is to continue to work on what we have been doing in connecting tenants to rental assistance, connecting landlords to rental assistance. If they're qualified, I want to make that point very, very clear. There's nothing about Assembly Bill 486 or nothing about the eviction mediation program that allows anybody to jump ahead or to get funds that they are not eligible for. This is simply connecting all the dots together, the courts, the counties, Home Means Nevada, to provide whatever is available to those tenants. If they're not eligible, then the process obviously proceeds according to the legal requirements. But the program has really produced some successful results. And Clark County, and I don't mean to single them out, but in collaboration with the first round of the rental eviction mediation program back in 2020, and now the second round, has done an amazing job of processing rental applications, of getting tenants qualified, of getting eviction cases off of the court calendars. So it is my opinion that to stop this now would not be good for the state, would not be good for residents who are now getting their jobs back and who maybe need that rental assistance to get themselves caught up on their back rent and to move forward. But, you know, I use that line in my written testimony that this is a once-in-pandemic opportunity for rental assistance that may not come along again. So to extend this program through 2023, in my view, would be good for the state and would meet the intent of what we've all been working on together for now. It's 9 months now, which is hard to believe. But I'm confident that Home Means Nevada can continue to implement this program and will continue to adjust and expand as needed based on the requirements of Assembly Bill 486, and we'll continue to work together as a team that, like I said, I have not seen in my over 10 years of state government in Nevada, of everybody just coming together and making this work. And in my opinion, again, could be something that provides a model going forward when we're out of, quote unquote, this pandemic phase and out of this emergency situation. But, you know, I wouldn't be here today saying these things if I didn't believe in it and didn't believe that it was the right course of action for your body and for the legislature and also for the state. So, again, thank you very much for the time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Chambers. Do my colleagues on the court have any questions for Ms. Chambers?
I do.
Yes, go ahead, Justice Pickering.
For the record, could you give a summary of the current status of rental assistance and what the criteria for qualification is, whether on a state or federal level?
So, Justice Pickering, in all honesty, I would have to defer that question to the counties, because Home Means Nevada is not the designated entity to approve those applications or to implement what those requirements on. If I tried to answer that question, I would give the wrong answer, and that's with no disrespect to you, but I do believe there's individuals from Clark County that are on this call that could answer that question much more accurately than I could.
Thank you. I thank you for that response.
Thank you.
Ms. Chambers, I don't see any other questions. On behalf of the court, we'd like to express our thanks to you individually and to Home Means Nevada for assuming the responsibilities that were contained in the rules and spending the time and effort and your expertise in advancing the program. We appreciate your service to the state and your assistance to the court. Thank you very much for your input today.
Thank you very much, Chief Justice. I appreciate it.
Are there other persons on the call who would like to offer comment on Administrative Docket 0567?
Justice Hardesty, this is Judge Saragosa with Las Vegas Justice Court, and at the appropriate time, I would like to make a few comments.
Yes, Judge, please proceed.
My comments are fairly brief, but one is the system that has been in place with the rules regarding mandatory mediation that we've been following since the fall of 2020. My staff, who handles the lion's share and probably then some of the evictions in the state, they've undergone retraining. We were very vocal when those original rules were passed that the number of times that my staff members have to handle a file is better, is optimal, because it does take some time. And even though it might only seem like 3, 4, 5 minutes on a case, when you're talking about thousands of cases, it's overwhelming. So my comments are, to the extent that we can continue to follow the procedures that are set forth in the existing mediation rules, I would ask you to keep that, not only for the sake of my staff, but not having to retrain them on new procedures. We've also cross-trained a number of our traffic division employees to help us with the eviction surge that we're expecting. So I don't want all of that training and the procedural knowledge to go to waste. So that was my one request, that if you are modifying rules, to keep them as much as possible in line with what already exists and what they're already doing. My second comment is with respect to AB 46 and its inclusion of a designated eviction of what we call the formal unlawful detainer action. I want those that may not be as familiar with the different types to understand this is a formal civil action with a complaint and a summons, service pursuant to Rule 4I and a couple of other local justice court rules. They are not summary proceedings. In general, the way that those cases come before the court now is, and I'm just referring to those that are non-payment of rent that are included within the designated category under AB 486. So a landlord who seeks to evict an owner of a mobile home or manufactured home from the manufactured home lot are the cases that we're talking about. So they will file their complaint with the court. At that same time, they will almost always file a request for an order shortening time to answer the complaint pursuant to rule, Justice Court Rule of Civil Procedure 108. Typically, that time is shortened and only up to 10 days, a limited of 10 days, no shorter than that. At the same time, they present to the court a request for a trial setting. In the Las Vegas Justice Court, our trial settings on those cases are almost always 45 to 60 days out. That trial setting, it is required under Justice Court Rule of Civil Procedure 107 that the summons and complaint and order setting trial be served on the tenant at least 20 days before trial. And given Rule 6, that's a calendar day, not a judicial day. So with that 45 to 60 days already there, I guess my question is, one, whatever rules are put in place to refer those cases to mediation, it would be my hope that we could refer those at the early stage and still be able to set that trial 60 days out, let's say, because that would allow for the period of time to mediate, first of all. But second of all, it prevents my staff from having to handle that matter multiple times and prevents that case from getting lost in the system. As long as we have a future kind of, even if it's a tentative court date set, it helps us keep track of that case. and avoids anything getting lost in the midst of everything. Along the other lines of that case, it is also my hope that in that scenario, we know that the tenant has not answered yet, because we're going to be referring that case at some point prior to that. So I guess I'm just not sure how else we would work that procedurally. If we waited until the answer was filed, in those cases where an answer is filed, to set a trial date or to send it to mediation, I'm just not sure how that would look. Basically, we would wait until an answer is filed, at that point trigger it and send it to mediation. But then what about the cases where there's no answer filed? Would we wait and tell the landlord that they can't request a trial setting until some later point after 30 days? I'm just not sure where the stay would start. I guess that's my question for everyone to consider in creating the rules with respect to that unique kind of case. How would we get that done? My request would be that my staff be able to keep their same procedure, set that trial 60 days out, and refer it to mediation, and that gives 60 days for everybody to mediate. If the tenant doesn't get involved in the case until, you know, a later time when they file their answer, they have 10 days after service, then we can always continue that case and at least keep track of it. Those are my only comments, sir, with respect to the mediation rules and how it would work with that unique case type that's not contemplated under the existing rules that are focused only on summary eviction proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge, for your input. Do any of my colleagues have any questions for Judge Saragossa?
I do. Judge Saragossa, this is Justice Silver. I have a question, just out of curiosity, because I just want to see if I'm understanding this correctly. When I was a justice of the peace there, all 10 of the departments, all 10 justices of the peace, handled evictions every single day, Monday through Friday, on their calendar. Did I hear that right? Are you the only one handling evictions? There are 15 judges in justice court at this time. We're going to put a 16th in, and you're the only one handling evictions? Did I hear that right?
I think there was a little bit lost in probably my communication, Justice Silver. Our current situation is when, in about 2009, we reconfigured our bench so that not every judge was hearing all of the civil calendar. So we split that at the time.
Oh, I see. I left in 2009. Okay, so you reconfigured it.
It was about the middle of 2009, right about the time that you went to the district court. And so we isolated all of our civil cases, including the evictions, among two of our justices. That has held true throughout. So we have two justices that hear general civil matters. We added on a hearing master about 3 years ago. That hearing master has been currently hearing all of the summary evictions. The formal unlawful detainer cases used to be heard by the two civil departments. When I became chief judge, I took the formal unlawful detainer cases with me. So I have only chief judge responsibilities and unlawful detainer civil actions. And then we have two additional hearing masters that are splitting the caseload, if you will. So they were dedicated in part to small claims and traffic matters, but because of the anticipation for this eviction surge, we have, and our reconfiguration of our traffic division, we've moved those resources to hear evictions as summary evictions as well. So we have far more than just one person hearing evictions, and our other judges are helping with the motion work that accompanies the eviction cases.
Okay. But there's still 15 departments down there that could handle it as well. I mean, there's other judges that could handle and help out during this crisis.
Absolutely. And to the extent that that's needed, we have them lined up to do so. Now that we have an expanded ability to hear court all day in all of our courtrooms, we have several judges that have previously held a civil assignment, and there are plenty of people that are willing to help and handle these cases when that need arises.
So how many total judges or presiding hearing masters on an everyday basis hear evictions?
Currently or could?
So there's two justices of the peace is what I'm getting and two hearing masters. And do you handle them Monday through Friday, all of these evictions?
The county moved our court operations to 4/10s, so we are Monday to Thursday currently. We're exploring options to reopen to 5 days for the customer service windows, but it looks like we're going to end up staying at a 4/10 schedule, so for Monday to Thursday, 4 days a week. Currently, we have one hearing master who hears summary evictions, one judge that hears unlawful detainer trials, and we have the ability to add on two additional hearing masters and probably an additional 13 judges in the afternoon sessions for evictions if the need arose.
Okay, thank you, Judge Zaragoza. Any other questions for the judge?
No, thank you, Judge Zaragoza.
All right, thank you for your input today, Judge Zaragoza. We appreciate it. Are there any other persons on the Zoom meeting that would like to offer a public comment? Mr. Burkle?
Thank you, Justice Hardesty. Good afternoon, members of the court. Well, my name is Jim Birchtold. I am the directing attorney for the Consumer Rights Project at Legal Aid Center in Southern Nevada. And I wanted to make a couple of comments to supplement my written submission in support of the mediation program and the revisions to the mediation rules you deem appropriate. During the pandemic, as the federal and state eviction moratoriums have come and gone, the mediation program has really proven to be a valuable tool. During gaps in the tenant protections, when evictions for non-payment of rent were allowed, our attorneys represented a number of tenants through the mediation program and generally were able to obtain favorable results. Some of the tenants were able to negotiate repayment plans with their landlords. Some tenants were able to negotiate specific move-out dates to avoid an eviction. And some tenants were able to access the federal rental assistance that is currently available through the context of that mediation program. And that's a win for everybody. It gets money into the pockets of the landlords, and it keeps the tenants housed. Right now, there is some $360 million available in rental assistance for Nevada. But one of the big challenges has been, how do you connect the landlords and the tenants with that assistance before the eviction takes place? Because once the eviction takes place, the tenant is no longer eligible for that assistance. That means the tenant is not only evicted, but the tenant leaves the property with a substantial debt that will probably result in a judgment and eventually result in a writ of garnishment if and when that tenant returns to work. And right now, we are talking to tenants every day who are facing rental arrearages in the tens of thousands of dollars. And those are amounts that a tenant will never be able to get out from under unless they can tap into that federal money. And that's one of the really important roles that the mediation program can play. When an eviction goes into mediation, Clark County expedites that tenant's rental application so that in the context of that mediation, the landlord and the tenant can know whether that tenant is eligible for that rental assistance and how much they're eligible for, so that hopefully within that mediation, the landlord and tenant can reach an agreement to avoid that eviction. Or if the eviction is unavoidable, to at least access that money so the tenant can leave the property without the burden of that rental debt. Because we think the mediation program plays such a critical role, we were very pleased to see the Nevada legislature's efforts with respect to AB 486 and the governor's support for that bill. AB 486 does a number of interesting things, but one of the great things it does is it actually contemplates that evictions other than non-payment evictions will also be able to access mediation and have the opportunity to sit down, landlord and tenant, sit down with a mediator. So that means that if a tenant is evicted, or if a tenant receives an eviction notice, let's say for a lease violation, but the tenant is also delinquent in rent, that tenant will be able to go through the mediation program and hopefully access those rental assistance dollars. Right now, under the mediation rules, non-payment evictions go into the mediation program if one of the parties requests. We would ask the court to expand the rules so that other types of evictions where rent is delinquent also go into mediation. And why is that important? We saw during the pandemic that during those times, as the federal and state moratoriums were fluctuating, during those times when non-payment evictions were prohibited, but other types of evictions were allowed, the landlord simply stopped using non-payment evictions and started using every other type of eviction as a workaround to try to remove that tenant, often relying on really incredibly minor infractions to justify the tenant's removal, even though the real issue between the landlord and the tenant was the non-payment of rent. And the removal of that tenant deprives the tenant from the opportunity to access those rental funds, potentially forcing that tenant into long-term debt. So our mantra at Legal Aid is there's no downside to mediation, right? We tell every tenant, elect mediation if it's available to you, because there is such an opportunity for creative solutions if you are able to sit down with a skilled mediator face-to-face with the landlord. So we thank you for your forethought in creating the mediation program and for your leadership as Nevada begins to recover from what has been a really, really terrible year. So we thank you for your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Does anybody on the court have any questions for Mr. Burstall? Yes, Justice Silver.
I do. Mr. Burchell, I'm just curious on this, too. What claims did these landlords have as a workaround from the summary eviction? I'm just curious because you brought it up. So, you know, what kind of claims are we talking about? And then, I mean, at the end of the day, it's still up to the justice of the peace. If they feel that a landlord's doing that, they certainly don't have to evict either. They can just deny the eviction. But what exactly, maybe I'm just curious as to what we're talking about.
Thank you for the question, Justice Silver. So we started seeing all types of things that would never have justified an eviction prior to the pandemic were all of a sudden the subject of lease violation notices. We started seeing there's a dead bush in the yard, and so I'm going to evict you on a lease violation because you're not taking care of the yard. Rental insurance was a big one. I have never seen a lease violation eviction for the tenant's failure to procure rental insurance, because it's no benefit to the landlord. It doesn't benefit the landlord. It benefits the tenant. And yet, all of a sudden, we saw a rash of evictions based on failure to obtain rental assistance. So, and those are just a couple of examples. We saw all sorts of creative evictions that we had never, ever seen before. And really, those tenants, the issue was the tenant was unable to pay rent. There was a delinquency in rent, and so the landlord was trying to evict. And often, those lease violations were accompanied with attempts to evict for the non-payment of rent, because that's really what the eviction was about. So that's why if those landlords and tenants were able to go into the mediation program and talk about the real issue with a mediator, which is rent, that would benefit both the landlord and the tenant.
Can I ask one more question? Couldn't the Is there something in there that provides, though, perhaps, that if the justice of the peace feels that the landlord's being is somehow doing that, and it's really based on non-payment of rent rather than a violation of the lease, is there something in the rules that provides that then the justice of the peace can then, I mean, there's nothing that prevents the justice from them ordering that, right? It doesn't have to necessarily be in the rules.
That's correct, Your Honor. So right now, as the rules are currently written, non-payment of evictions are referred to mediation at the request of one of the parties, but the judge has the discretion to refer other types of mediation, other types of evictions into the mediation program as well. And this is with no respect to the justices of the peace, but during the pandemic, I have not seen one eviction that is not a non-payment eviction referred to the mediation program. Now, part of that, I'm sure, is due to the moratoriums that are in place. But there have been evictions for things other than non-payment going forward, and those cases were not referred to mediation.
Any other questions?
I have a question. Good afternoon, Mr. Berchtold. This is Justice Pickering, and I'm asking you pretty much the same question I asked Ms. Chambers, which is, what are the current criteria for eligibility for rental assistance? And then the second question, if you know, how much rental assistance has been paid out pursuant to the eviction mediation program?
Good afternoon, Justice Pickering. And I am so sorry that I am going to have to give the same response as Ms. Chambers. I know that from Clark County is on the call and is going to give comments. He is with Clark County Social Services and would be in a much better position to address those questions than I would be.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Berchtold. Are there any other questions?
Yeah. Chief, this is Justice Kadish. May I ask a question?
Of course, sure.
Mr. Berchtold, pleasure to see you. I understand the written comments were submitted May 27 when there was some uncertainty about what was actually going to end up in AB 486. So now looking back at it, and you mentioned today specifically allowing these other types of evictions where rent is delinquent to go into the program. And so first on that issue, the court can refer them, but you would allow the parties to, what you're asking for is so that the parties can request that those go in as well. Is that what you're saying on that point?
Correct, Your Honor. Under AB 486, the definition of the evictions that are covered are evictions under NRS 40.254, which is the summary eviction process for evictions other than non-payment of rent, where rent is delinquent. So the statute contemplates, or it's not a statute yet, the bill contemplates that those evictions would go into mediation, but the mediation rules as currently written contemplate only that non-payment evictions would go into the mediation program unless otherwise ordered by a judge. So I think for the sake of clarity and those rules, the program working together with AB 486, I think it would make sense to modify the rules to include those other evictions as well.
Okay. One of the other comments in your written comments was about a section in the proposed bill that was about perhaps some additional disclosures that were going to be required by the landlord, and if so, you'd want the conforming language. Did that end up in the final bill?
It did, Your Honor. It did. Under the mediation rules, there are certain disclosures that a landlord is required to make. Under AB 486, there are certain disclosures that a landlord is required to make. There is some overlap between those disclosures. For the sake of clarity, for ease of the landlords, for the sake of getting accurate, consistent information to the tenants, it was a suggestion that we made that perhaps those could be harmonize.
Okay. And then one of your other comments was, again, about provision in the then proposed bill about automatic referral to mediation rather than a requirement to request that. Is that part of the bill as passed by the legislature?
Yes, Your Honor, it is. Under 486, it appears that the referral to mediation is fairly automatic. I don't see any provision that would indicate some request needing to be made. Under the eviction mediation rules, the case only goes into mediation if either the landlord or the tenant requests that it go into mediation. So again, for the sake of clarity, hopefully, we suggest that those provisions may be able to be harmonized.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate your work on this.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Burstall? All right. Thank you, Mr. Burstall, for being available today and presenting. Are there any other persons who would like to present? Perhaps Mr. Reynoso from the Clark County could join the call if he's present and could provide some answers to Justice Pickering's questions in addition to any other comments he might have to make.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Randy Reynoso. I am the Assistant Director of Clark County Social Service. And thank you very much, Chief Justice Hardesty and Honorable Justices of the Nevada Supreme Court for affording me this opportunity to speak to the matter. I'm here to support the eviction mediation program and to urge you to make other changes as you deem appropriate. By way of background, Clark County has been instrumental in creating a pandemic-related housing response. We currently have $360 million in rental assistance to distribute. Over the past couple of months, we have worked with all the justice courts in Clark County and Home Means Nevada to create an eviction prevention program with the goal of paying landlords and avoiding preventable evictions. We started by looking at all the eviction cases that were stopped by the moratorium, the backlog, if you will. Starting with these cases, we have already processed nearly 2,000 of those, paying $4 million to landlords and preventing 2,000 unnecessary evictions. And that was just in the last 2 months. Our intent is to continue this effort going forward, obtaining the information on a daily basis from the justice courts in Clark County. To address the capacity of the need that is out there, which is, as you know, unprecedented, we now have 300 contract employees who are on board or in the process of being onboarded to help process these applications and get the money distributed to those qualified individuals as quickly as possible. In addition, we also have incorporated the assistance of three nonprofit organizations who will be working directly with tenants to help them apply for CHAP if they haven't done so already, or to help them make sure they have all the needed or necessary documents that would help determine their eligibility, to help them upload that information into our system so that we can, on our end, just process the applications and eliminate any delays that may currently exist, so that they play an instrumental role. We're also working with Legal Aid of Southern Nevada to have these resources available at the Civil Law Health of Self-Help Center and at numerous pop-ups, which will help tenants respond to eviction notices and apply for rental assistance. Continuing the successful mediation program and expanding it to cover any evictions where rental money is owed is critical to making all of this going forward. Let me explain why. We want to spend every dime of the $360 million to landlords who are owed the money. If we don't, the money would just be reverted to the federal government. And if landlords are not paid, they are very likely or possibly could sue tenants for back rent, which would result or could result in garnishments of up to 25% of a tenant's income, which would result in another eviction or bankruptcy, with a spiral of downward economic stressors that could hurt our recovery and send a second wave of evictions to my department, my agency. By allowing every case where rental assistance is owed to the mediators, by allowing every case where rental assistance is owed to go to mediation, we cure those deficiencies and work out alternatives to eviction, always a preferable route. We at Social Service would also have an opportunity to rehouse tenants if a successful resolution isn't possible. Without mediation, we're only going to have 24 hours to try to rehouse families in severe distress, and that is something that is just not doable. In closing, I've worked for Clark County Social Service for over 13 years, just celebrated my 13th anniversary. I have never seen all three branches of government come together in the way they have to prevent this community calamity. The executive branch has allocated money for mediators and rental assistance and created an infrastructure to distribute funding to those in need. The judicial branch has created a successful mediation framework to give us the time to get rental assistance delivered. Chief Justices Saragossa, Tyrell, and Bateman have been helping us plan for a workable approach. Chief Justice Hardesty has urged all of us to collaborate. The legislative branch has enacted AB 486 along with the governor to create a framework for marrying rental assistance to our court processes. And Legal Aid of Southern Nevada has trained over 300 community volunteers and dedicated their staff to helping tenants apply for rental assistance and file their paperwork. We have spent hundreds of hours to create a workable framework to promote community recovery. I want to thank all of you for your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I think some of the questions that were asked earlier, I can answer for you.
Thank you, Mr. Renoso. I'll ask Justice Pickering to ask her questions so she articulates them the way she wants to. I think you might be the person in the best position to respond.
Thank you for your testimony today, Mr. Renoso. I'm trying to understand the rental assistance that is available, the criteria that are applied in determining that, and the time from application to delivery of those funds, and how that works. Could you give me sort of an overview of that, or we could take those question by question?
Sure. I will start with the first question, as I understood it, which was basically how someone would qualify for the assistance through the program. Excuse me. In order to be eligible for the program, a resident of Clark County, I have my notes here for this one. I misread them. Excuse me. In order to qualify for the program, a resident of Clark County must demonstrate that they have suffered substantial financial hardship and now, as a result of that hardship, lack sufficient income or resources available to pay their housing costs. An example of financial hardship, a few examples, things that we see most frequently could be a reduction in work hours. It could be loss of employment. Someone's furloughed from employment during the stay-at-home order. A reduction in salary due to reduced business income, or even situations where an individual may have incurred significant costs that are a direct result of COVID-19. The qualifying factors for the program. Household must have at least one member who has been financially impacted because of the COVID-19 response to the pandemic. They also have to demonstrate a risk of experiencing homelessness or housing instability, and the total household income has to be less than 80% of area median income. There is certain documentation that's required in order to sort of demonstrate or prove those three things. For example, for demonstrating risk of experiencing homelessness or housing instability. That would basically could be anything from an eviction notice to a past due utility bill to a statement from the landlord that a resident or tenant is in the arrears. Same thing for income. Like we need proof of income. Like you need to demonstrate and prove to us that you are not making, as a combined total, the household is not making more than 80% of AMI. There's a lot more specificity, and I'd be more than happy to send the information that's a little bit more granular, if you so wish to see that. But overall, the criteria that I just went over, those are the general criteria that need to be met in order to qualify for the program.
And you mentioned that 2,000 claims have been processed and 4 million paid out. Over what period of time has that occurred?
Let me specify that. The 2,000 households, landlords that were assisted with the $4 million. That was specific to the landlord, eviction prevention program that was implemented in the beginning of April with the courts. That is a small sliver of the overall picture of individuals that we've helped. That was specific to addressing the backlog. So of the impending evictions, the ones that were put on hold when the moratorium was extended, that among that list of people, it's 2,000 households, $4 million. But overall, as a program, we've actually provided well over $100 million on behalf of 24,000 households, and which includes it covered 24,000 households with rent being paid to about 3,500 different landlords. So overall, that's the amount that we've helped. I hope I answered your question. Maybe I misunderstood it.
And when you determine that an application has been validated and meets the criteria and payment is going to be made, to whom does that payment go?
It gets paid, in most instances, it goes directly to the landlord. The only time it would, the rules allow if the landlord doesn't want to cooperate and doesn't want to fill out the requisite forms, there is another option, which is paying the tenant directly. But that's typically an exception. It's not the standard is to pay directly to the landlord.
And is there a limit on the length of time that these payments can cover, or a percentage of the rent that is due? Say a person has $1,000 a month rental and they've been in arrears for 10 months. If the tenant meets your criteria, does that get paid 100%, or is it some percentage of that?
It's 100%, but a person is not able to receive more than 12 months worth of assistance starting in March of 2020. So if a person received assistance or needs assistance from March 2020 through April 2021, we would only be able to assist with 12 months of that.
Okay, and one last question. Sure. Always a dangerous thing from a lawyer, but the last question that I have is, how much of that money has been paid out through the eviction mediation program? Or is that the 2,000 claims, $4 million figure?
Yes, I would say that is, yes, ma'am, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Reynoso? Okay. Thank you. Really appreciate your participation and being available today, Mr. Reynoso. Are there any other persons participating in the call who would like to make comment to the court today?
My name is...
go ahead, Mr. Catha. Paul Catha.
Thank you, sir. My name is Paul Catha, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Culinary Union. The COVID-19 pandemic has hit Culinary Union members and their families incredibly hard. While hospitality workers are slowly returning to work, tens of thousands are still unemployed and struggling with housing insecurity. Since last March, the Culinary Union has worked with our housing fund and other organizations to keep workers in their homes. Unfortunately, there are still too many Nevadans who have lost their home during this pandemic. Adjusting the summary eviction mediation program in order to align it with AB 486 will help keep Nevadans in their homes and ensure rental assistance is utilized to prevent evictions and repay landlords. In the middle of this pandemic, working families and people of color have been disproportionately impacted by housing insecurity, and adjusting and extending the temporary residential summary eviction mediation rules is a step in the right direction towards rectifying that. With the eviction moratorium ending, Nevada must ensure that its citizens do not get evicted when rental assistance is still available. The Culinary Union believes that every Nevadan deserves to be treated with dignity and that housing is a human right. Nevadans should not have to decide between having food on the table or a roof over their head. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Catha, for your comments. Any questions for Mr. Catha? I don't see anything from the justices right now. Thank you for being present today Anyone else who would like to make a comment to the court?
Yes.
Your name, please, Ms. Moore.
My name is Tiara Moore. I am the Housing Justice Organizer for Progressive Leadership Alliance of Nevada. And I just had a comment in regards to the actual mediation program, and I'm hopeful that it will continue to be successful. But in my case, I was evicted February the 16th of 2021, and I requested mediation through the mediation program and was unsuccessful because the landlord denied, and he wasn't really a landlord. He was actually inherited this home, which me and my partner, we were living in due to my partner taking care of his grandparents. They were terminal in 2018 due to HIV, and in 2020, the grandfather passed of COVID when the pandemic first happened. Because he was already immune compromised, he ended up passing the beginning part of the pandemic, and the home was left to his son, which is my partner's uncle. And they didn't take probate and go to court until like August of 2020. And we were already living in the home with our children, taking care of the grandparents. So there was no rent being paid. All the utilities were in our name, and it was the grandparents' house, but they had transitioned everything over to our name due to their illness. And the house was left to his son, which was next of kin. And he came in and wanted to sell the home for $310,000. We went through the home buying process. We went through everything to try and get the home. We were only approved for $250,000. So we were unable to get the home. So we needed more time to find something that suit our, what we were approved for. So he went and filed an eviction under Tennessee at will because we were not under any lease. There wasn't any back rent. There wasn't any back mortgage. It was just he wanted to sell the home because he was inherited this home. And we were already living in the home for over 3 years. And the judge, we requested for mediation. And he denied mediation with the uncle. And that was it. We never heard anything back from the mediation people. We never heard back from the court. They sent the email saying that Wesley Pettaway denied mediation, and the eviction was granted 3 days later. So back February the 19th of 2021, we were evicted from the home during the pandemic, having to go live in a hotel, which we spent over $6,000 because it was almost $600 a week. But, you know, I'm hearing what the mediation program is doing, has done, but it just did not work in our case, and we requested for mediation, which that $6,000 could have went towards the home that we were trying to purchase, that we used in the hotel, and also the fact that mediation was not even negotiated. We'd never heard anything back other than Wesley denies mediation. We only needed more time because the housing market here in Nevada was crazy. We kept getting outbidded. There's not a lot of homes on the market for $250,000. So we, you know, it took us more than 45 days to try and find a home. And here it is, you know, we were evicted. I was 8 months pregnant at the time, living in a hotel in the process of buying a house. So it's not like we were not, we didn't have the money. It was never a money issue. It was more so Tennessee at will. So I'm really looking forward and hopeful for the mediation program that it will expand and cover Tennessee at will and really help people. Not that, you know, people can say, well, I don't want to participate in mediation and the person is left out on the streets or whatever the case may be. It really needs to be worked out to where the landlord or the person who have property have to cooperate with mediation if they have property here in Nevada, because I felt like that was very unfair to my family. I have three small children that were in school that had to go to school from a hotel, and I was 8 months pregnant. So I'm just looking forward to the mediation program and what it will do, but it really needs to be expanded and looked at and really revised for not other than non-payment of rent, because from what I'm hearing, it's only covering for non-payment of rent, and that was not our case at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Moore. Appreciate your input today. Anyone else who would like to offer comment to the court on this matter?
Yes. Hi. Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. Mr. Larson, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Justin Larson. I am a Starbucks barista at McCarran Airport. The COVID-19 pandemic was one of the hardest things that I've ever been through. I have an underlying health condition, asthma, and I was really stressed about getting COVID. And actually in June of 2020, I caught COVID and it was really tough. I was laid off during the pandemic and not working for 4 months. That was financially challenging. Now, I'm fully vaccinated and back to work, but I'm still recovering financially and medically. It's going to take a long time for me to get back to a good spot again. So Nevadans need temporary residential summary eviction mediation rules to be adjusted to be in line with Assembly Bill 486 and extended so that now the moratorium has been lifted, renters can still access mediation. Eviction mediation is critical to getting renters like me connected with rental assistance and having cases resolved without creating harmful eviction records. So what I ask is please don't let Nevadans get evicted where there's money available to help us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Anyone else who'd like to make comment to the court today?
Hello. Thank you, Chief Justice Hardesty and Justice of the Court. My name is Benjamin Challenor, and I am the Policy Director for Faith in Action Nevada. We would first like to thank the court and the legislature for their work in, on SB 1 of the 32nd session, special session, I should say, and the help through the mediation program that has helped keep Nevadans in their homes. Unfortunately, a lot of Nevadans fell through the cracks and were still evicted. With the new mediation program to be implemented with AB 46, we hope that this will be able to capture a lot more Nevadans to make sure that they are being safely in their homes, to make sure that they are working out with the landlords and making sure that we are able to get the needed assistance to them in a timely manner to keep Nevadans in their homes and to make these landlords whole again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Challenor. Any other person wishing to make a public comment to the court? All right. Hearing and seeing none. Ms. Chambers, were you wanting to speak again?
No, Chief Justice Hardesty, I just want to say that, you know, I think many of the comments today express how valuable the program is and what it can do for individuals. And with millions of dollars of rental assistance sitting there, I think every effort that the state and the counties and cities and the courts can make to keep residents housed and cases out of court, that is my opinion that I would support that and would recommend extending the program and the rules.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Chambers. I think that that would conclude the public comment on this administrative docket today. Unless there are any questions or comments by justices, we will conclude the hearing and take the matter under submission. Are there any questions or comments, justices? Okay, thank you very much for those who attended and participated and for your public comment and input, and this matter will stand.